Welcome everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a member of the 1012 Podcast Network. You can find all the great coverage of the Big 12 over at 1012network.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Helps get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Longhorn Republic. Choose an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. I'd also like to remind you, this podcast is brought to you by our friends over at Charlie Hustle Clothing Company, who are at the Big 12 tournament right now. Unlike the Longhorns, Charlie Hustle is a vintage-inspired clothing company based out of Kansas City that specializes in collegiate and hometown apparel. They want you to be the best dressed fan all year long, so be sure to check out their wide selection of officially licensed collegiate apparel today and show off your school spirit all year long. With more than 30 schools to choose from, they've got you covered with all of your collegiate apparel needs, and you can get 15% off any non-sale item by using the code 101215 at checkout. That's TEN1215 at checkout. Shop today over at charliehustle.com. Charlie Hustle, vintage made fresh. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week, and I'm joined by a man who hates leaving a party early, Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
You know, I'm doing all right, Gerald. I'm trying to take a totality view of the athletic program and not just, you know, the most recent disappointment that's the freshest since we're recording this on Thursday. I'm good, Gerald. How are you?
You know, I'm okay. Other than the fact I'm out of town. I'm visiting my mother-in-law for spring break, and I brought my microphone stand. I brought my cable, but I did not bring my microphone. So if my audio sounds weird, that's why. I was unprepared, seeming just like the Texas Longhorn men's basketball team, who made an early exit from the Big 12 basketball tournament, unlike a year ago and unlike 3 years ago, where they came away with the trophy. The ladies, on the other hand, left with everything and some extra stuff, including a trophy and pieces of the net. So they cut down the nets and got the Big 12 win, while the men did not. We've also got a lot of national and high-level competition happening around the campus, faring better than the men's basketball team. So we'll talk about all that today, but we'll start with Vic Schaefer and the Texas Longhorn women's basketball team claiming the Big 12 conference tournament in their final chance. Vic Schaefer getting emotional on stage as Brett Yormark tried to smile, was unable to, but could not deny Vic and his team the win. In spite of the shaky start to the conference play, Texas not being able to clinch the regular season a few weeks ago, Texas without their star player who's been out all year due to injury. You could add all sorts of superlatives to this one, but when push comes to shove, all that matters is Texas avenged last year's upset to Iowa State to claim the trophy, becoming one of the 19,000 schools that have won a Big 12 championship on the way out. Kyle, how you feeling?
Look, this was a this was a great showing for Vic. They probably had the toughest proximity route for the actual championship. They went through the three closest teams to Kansas City. I've seen some, you know, conversation about the fact that the Big 12 is hosted in Kansas City, and I think on the men's side, at least something like 19 out of the past some 20-odd featured one of those three teams in it. But anyways, neither here nor there. Ames, 230 miles, Manhattan, 121, Lawrence, 41 miles. It mattered not. The home court, the Longhorn fans showed out, and the Longhorn players showed up. It happened in different ways, right? They pulled away late in the fourth quarter in that first game against KU. They needed to really execute down the stretch in a close one against against Kansas State, and then they just blew the brakes off Iowa State.
As the good Lord intended.
Indeed, indeed. Iowa State blew the brakes off OU, and then Texas blew the brakes off Iowa State. So a transitive, I don't know, 50-point win over Oklahoma there. But anyways, the story of the tournament has been the story of the entire season. Maddie Booker named the MOP. Gerald, she's the second freshman to ever do it. Trivia, do you know the first freshman to win out most outstanding player at the Big 12 tournament, if Maddie Booker is the second?
Give me a hint. Recent or not recent?
Recent.
I'm going to feel embarrassed because my initial rest in peace, Tiffany Jackson, was going to be my first guest because I still have a crush on her 20 years later. I'm drawing a blank.
It is very recent, Gerald. The last time they won it, in fact, they lost last year to Iowa State, but beat Baylor 2 years ago when a young freshman by the name of Rory Harmon became the first freshman to ever win it. So the only two freshmen to ever do it. I'm embarrassed
that I didn't get that.
it's okay. You know, it's hard to remember Rory was a freshman at one point and lit the world on fire.
She was indeed a freshman.
She's been Coach Harmon. I mean, she's really stepped up. Admittedly, they've talked a lot about it during the tournament, but stepped up in coaching. Most outstanding player, Maddie Booker, who's really taken on a position that isn't her natural, not a natural point guard, but just a natural ball player who's you know, been fantastic. Averaged 22 in the tournament, had three total turnovers in three games. Just was efficient against Kansas State, where she got in some foul trouble and didn't carry the team. They had everyone in double figures. But, Gerald, the thing I think that I want to talk about is the defense continued to be great. And in particular, I think the best defender, all Big 12 defensive team, should have probably got some more consideration for Big 12 Defender of the Year. But Shea Holly came up huge down the stretch.
You know, it was I thought it was going to be Shea Gonzalez in the Kansas State game, or the Kansas game, excuse me. And it was Shea Holly who came up and just absolutely just had onions, like five points on two possessions. It felt like in about 7 seconds, absolutely just crushed it. Absolute killer. And then she did it again. And it wasn't. The heroics were just as outstanding. You know, Texas was tied 61, and then she really, and I'm not going to steal your joke here, but she really she really looked like a legend in the desert for Texas.
That's right. The joke here, and I think it's funniest because I'm sure everyone assumed it was Gerald who tweeted it. It was in fact Kyle who made the comment that Shea Holly is becoming Shea Holud right before our eyes. And if you don't get that, you still need to go watch Gerald's Godzillatron from last week, Dune 2, of course, or the first Dune. But basically, yes, she's becoming an immortal almost being in front of our eyes. The Kansas game, you know, started it off with the 8 of her 10 in a 1 minute stretch in the fourth quarter. And then, as Gerald alluded to, that Kansas State game, she hits the dagger 3, and also the beautiful inbounds play gets loose for the two pointer that sealed the game, though there were free throws to come. But you know, after two close games over the Sunflower State, the way that Texas came out and made a statement against Iowa State, boy, really, really to me said, this is a number one seed team who has something to say and wants to, they want that one on their chest. They want the pressure that comes with being a one seed. They want to claim it. And, you know, there've been some, basically, are they the fourth or the fifth best team, has been going back and forth. Are they going to get that last one seed, or will they be the top two seed? And I think based on that performance, it's hard to argue that Texas shouldn't be a one seed now.
It's very hard to argue that. And I think, you know, either way, this is a team that I think is peaking in the right moments. I think we think back to like a month ago when Vic yelled at them at the press conference, essentially, and where we are now. And again, it's still wild to think that they're doing all this without, like, how good would this team be at full strength? Like, this is an elite top four, top five team, and their best player is in streets right now. Like, that, it's just wild to think about what this team could be, and honestly, what they're probably going to be a year from now. So we'll come back to that seeding question after the men, but again, when under Vic Schaefer, that last one was a Vic Schaefer game. I was worried about Iowa State center. She does a lot of work. She did a lot of work against OU, really embarrassed them. But Texas shut her down and shut the rest of the team down, held them under 60, 37-0 over the last two seasons, holding people under 60 points. Massive, massive, massive win. So selection Sunday for both the men and the women are on Sunday. Texas hoping to pick up win at least number 31, if not get all the way to, 36 wins in that tournament, which makes the 12th 30-win season for Texas with more to come.
Gerald, can I just tell you, can I quickly tell you, this is the craziest stat, so I'll give you that hint. Do you know how many of their 30 wins this season were by double digits, including obviously the win over Iowa State?
I'm going to go a big number and say 20.
27 of their 30 wins were by double digits.
Like, wasn't big enough.
That's crazy. Like, the, yeah, I don't know. This is insane. A good team that has just been, you know, it's been great. They've had a couple mini wobbles, but usually they just come in and beat the brakes off folks. So the tournament is going to be really interesting. This was a great test for them to figure out how to, you know, close down the stretch and come up big. They're going to need that. I doubt they will win all six games by double digits, but, you know, who knows?
Whether you win by one or by 10, winning is still winning, which is something the men could not do. Number 7 seeded men's basketball opened against Kansas State and blew a double digit lead to see themselves eliminated in their first game of the Big 12 tournament, unable to defend their conference title, falling 78-74. It felt like they might have had some momentum going in. They had a massive regular season win, a closing win over OU 94-80. Just beat the brakes off of the Sooners for senior day. Felt good for them. Everything felt fine. The vibes felt good coming in. Texas built a double-digit halftime lead and then shot 29% in the second half, and things did not go well.
Yeah, I mean, it is an interesting juxtaposition to kind of zoom in on this slice of the season, right? Because it is the unpredictable.
It's pretty
horns.
Typical.
Yeah, you could basically say, right, the last four games before the Kansas State game, if you take the Baylor second half out, in which, you know, Dissou gets hurt, and maybe that changes the complexion of the game. But otherwise, they were playing some of their best basketball, obviously culminating in a huge win against OU, their seventh straight of the Red River hardwood edition. Tyrese Hunter is really exemplifying that Jekyll and Hyde of this team this year,
yes.
Right? The 30.7 assists, 3 steals, named the Big 12 Player of the Week, just dominating that OU game, disappeared for large stretches, if not the entirety of the first tournament game. And I saw someone post his home and away splits, and it's pretty stark as well, which again would be great if Texas, like baseball, got to host regionals and play postseason games at their own stadium, but that isn't how it works. And so they were ultimately going to have to play neutral site or road games. And, you know, he shoots like 20% less. He scores like 8 points less. Like, it's just, it's pretty drastic. And you saw it in this one. And again, I'm not going to blame it on one player. It's just, he was so good the game before. But the thing that I think worries me is Dissou had a sterling, you know, plus 22, I think, in his time in the court, but immediately the most, you know, the worst possible timeline in the way they started the second half was letting them score and Dissou picking up 2 quick, cheap, admittedly, fouls. And, you know, teams are going to recognize that and attack that. If you can get Dissou in foul trouble, if you can get him off the court, it's an entirely different team. The Texas team, you know, that could beat anyone in the country, and I truly believe that, becomes far more defanged without Dissou. And so,
wow.
I know. I didn't even write that down. That's just poetry out of my mouth. It's a legitimate concern, and I get it. It's the Big 12. They could have helped their seeding, but they didn't need it to get in. And so Kansas State was playing for their season was on the line in that second half. And you know, I don't know. I don't want to give any excuses here. They could still, you saw this with Beard's first year, they came out and promptly upset and soundly beat a good Virginia Tech team. So I'm not ruling out, based on the matchup, that they could still get a little something going, but the inconsistency is always going to be the Achilles heel. Even if they have one good game, can they have 2 in a row? Can they possibly have 3? You know, like it seems a little far-fetched right now for who this team is. You saw when the game got to it, Max Asemus is, you know, a legendary scorer, and he, you know, started hitting threes. And look, I Texas played so bad in the second half that I'm not going to really comment on the refs, but I will say that intentional foul call was...
That flagrant was,
bizarre. Like, it just truly, if that's the case, you change the way end of game, you know, strategy plays out, basically, end of game theory. If every late game foul is an intentional foul, it changes how games are closed, right? But that didn't feel that different than every other foul I've ever seen at the end of a game. Anyways, it ultimately mattered.
He wasn't going for the ball. That's what an intentional foul is.
Right, right. but anyway, like I said, it mattered because Asemus started hitting threes down the stretch. And, you know, who knows if it was instead of one possession game with free throws. It was a two possession game. Like, if that looks different. Anyways, Texas didn't deserve to win it, much like the phantom call against OU in the women's last game of the season, or relative last game of the season against OU. Like, a bad call at the end is the thing that you could say, if only that happened differently. But the team didn't take the chances they, you know, needed to win. Texas with a double digit lead, you know, reminds me of the Kevin from The Office chili gif. They can't have anything nice without just spilling it all over the floor. So, you know, it's disappointing, but again, not surprising. Honestly, I hate to say that. I would have loved to be celebrating like as Brock Cunningham, is tied for the UT record for most career wins after the OU win with AJ Abrams and Connor Atchley. This could have put him into the sole number one spot. You know, like those types of things would have been great to give some superlatives here, but you know, who knows if Texas is going to add another win to their tally this season. We'll be watching closely to see who they get paired up with in the bracket.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how it shakes out. Again, I am not confident in this team. It is surprisingly unsurprising that this is like the back-to-back that they ended the regular season with, right? Like, big win, big statement win, and then just crapping the bed against Kansas State, who honestly should have been outmatched and should have been run out of the gym. But now, Kyle, that we've wrapped up the Big 12 tournament for both the men's and the ladies, it's time for our Prize Picks moment of the week. Remember, Prize Picks is the best legal way for you to play player props in states like California, Florida, Texas, and more. It's also a great way to play daily fantasy on the app. Just you pick 2 to 5 players, go over under on their projections, and you can win up to 10 times on an entry. And any of our listeners who use the promo code Longhorn12, when you make a $100 deposit, you can get a 100% match up to that $100 threshold. Jump over to the App Store, grab the award-winning app on either Apple or the Google Play Store, and you can get started today. Again, Longhorn12 gets you a 100% deposit match of up to $100 using the code Longhorn12. So, Kyle, we're actually going to do 2 over-under picks today. First, we'll start with the champions, because champions get to eat first. Kyle, the ladies setting the line at 1.5. Is that what will their seed be when Selection Sunday happens? The line is 1.5.
I do think they're going to get it. Looking at some of the other teams, I think their case is as good as any. Some late season losses. You know, if any of the other one seeds, even, you know, not even winning your tournament, but not looking as dominant, it's hard to make the case that Texas isn't. I'm going to go optimistic here. I also love this team and what they fought through already. Texas women's get the one seed.
I like it. It's tough. I think the SEC championship, shaking out the way it did, worked out well for them. I think South Carolina is going to be obviously your number one seed. Iowa will probably be your other one of your number one seeds, USC. And then really, I think the toss-up is Stanford and Texas, right? Like, that's the other toss-up for them. And I think it's going to be hard for them to. Texas came out and was dominant against a ranked team, a team that's going to be a tournament team and a decently seeded tournament team at that. So, like, it's hard for me to say. I mean, just because I want some drama, I'll say they're going to go over. I think they're going to get a 2 seed maybe. But I would not be shocked to see them get a 1. So on the men's side, we're going to set the line, Kyle, at 9.5. Do you think they get an 8 or a 9, or are they a 10 seed?
Oh, man, this one's tougher. I really have no good thought. I think if they even would have won 1 game, I would have felt very confident that they were like an 8 or 9 seed. Right now, I'm in just such a place of ambivalence and lack of really expectation. I'm going to say over. I think they do get a 10 seed, just because if you watched the way that they lost that game in the second half, you may not want to rank them particularly high.
I also see that. I'm going to say 9 seed. I feel like they were an 8 seed going into the Big 12 tournament. I think they're probably solidified at a 9 seed right now. But again, I wouldn't be shocked if the tournament committee was like, you know what, you guys suck. Let's take a 10 seed. It is what it is. But we'll find out in just a few short days, and we'll be back next week to break down the NCAA tournament bracket and all of the info you need to know as Texas, the men and the ladies, presumably are heading to the postseason. Well, that brings us to the part of the show. We whip around the rest of campus and we down the 40. Players that were already, athletes that were already at the national tournament level on the track. Texas had not one, but two players medal at.
Yeah, you know, indoor, outdoor, it's not 100% correlation. And so sometimes, you know, specific events and certain teams being strong in specific events can skew things. I would have loved a little bit more here just because, you know, how much talent they have and how great of a year they had last year. They still, in the multis, seem to be, you know, one of the best in the country, and that will be translating, of course, to outdoor as well. But a gold and a bronze on the men's and women's side, respectively. Our guy Leo Neugenbauer brought home the title of what I like to call nation's greatest athlete with the heptathlon championship, broke his own school record by more than 100 points, I believe, also set the German national record at that time. And then, you know, our girl, Christine Blazevica, matched Texas's best ever finish with third in the pentathlon, coming up just a few points shy of her own UT record. I believe she now owns the sixth highest pentathlon scores in UT history, four times straight All-American. So in the multis, they were great. No one has do it all of ness, multifacetedness of the Texas Longhorns, but yeah, I a little disappointing. I think they had many All Americans, but a few people came up just short from meddling where maybe they hoped to do so.
Yeah, I think this is probably a disappointing outing for Flo and the track team. And I think, again, the outdoor season is already upon us, and so I think the outdoor season will be a little different for them. And I definitely think that Flo will get them right. I mean, the ladies were one of the elite teams in the Big 12, and the Big 12 is one of the elite track and field conferences in the country. So I think they'll be fine. It's disappointing. We're hoping to get some more Director's Cup points out of this one, but that's neither here nor there. On the diamond, the ladies stumble on the road early, but get it back together. Fall on Friday in a back and forth 112-10. Saturday, blow them out 9-2, and then have to rally against Houston for an 8-6 win. But then in the midweek matchup, fell to number 2 LSU 7-4. So you could read a lot into this, but I honestly just think it is just a weird year on the ladies' side. And I think this is not going to be a year, obviously, where somebody goes undefeated and wins a national championship. I think there's just a lot of good teams out there.
Yeah, and I think there's probably four at the top who are really, really elite, right? I think OU, Texas, Oklahoma State, and LSU, give them credit, right? Still undefeated at this point, are all just really elite teams. It's hard to beat LSU in any sport, but especially any diamond sport, in Baton Rouge. And, you know, Texas tried to make a comeback after giving up, a 5-0 opening inning and eventually down 6-0. They rallied back to lose 7-4. But Texas has needed a little bit of adversity. They showed some fight. They had a bit of a privileged opening, even against good teams. You know, they mollywopped a lot of folks to start the season. I think the Stanford, you know, battle was great, and then the UH loss was a little bit humbling. It's a good UH team. I do think that was a bit of an eye-opener for Texas that you can't, no matter how small the number next to your name is, and you saw, you know, a decent but not a world-beating Louisiana team beat OU, right? That there's talent in softball spread across. It's not just guaranteed that the good teams sweep every series, right? Getting a series win, much like in baseball, I think in the next few years, as you know, you see more parity across softball, will be a bigger deal. And so, again, Texas got the series win, opened up the Big 12 season with a series win. But again, they're very, very, very good at home. They've done exceptionally well at neutral sites. They haven't had a ton of true road tests other than UCLA, who they showed incredibly well against. But this was a you know, straight they went to Houston, had a rough one, then went straight to Baton Rouge. So we'll see how they respond to this, right? Maybe there's a little bit of pressure of having that number one ranking. Maybe, again, it's just they were never going to be an undefeated, perfect season, and this is a little bit of just learning, growing. To hear Coach White talk about it, he doesn't seem concerned. He almost sees this as a good thing. You took a punch. How do you respond, right? You wobbled a little bit early. You still have a lot of season to recover from it and be playing your best softball at the end of the season when it matters most.
Exactly, right? If you're going to learn the lessons that I think they learned against LSU, like, you have to come out and you can't rest on your laurels. Every team in the nation is going to put a target on your back, and I think it's better to learn that in non-conference play than it is in the super regionals or the regionals, right? So I think there's a lot to be learned there. I think some young players got a little bit of their learning done in that series, right? And even Texas, you know, rallied back. That's a game that they could have rolled over and died against LSU. They were down big, 6-0, right, in the third inning. And Texas, you know what, does says, you know, we're gonna pull ourselves up and we're gonna come back. And they weren't able to get it over, but that's some resiliency. And obviously, we're not looking at moral victories here. This is a team that we have national championship expectations of. But I think learning that lesson and learning something about yourself and developing some grit at this point in the season is a good thing. And so they've got another opportunity to earn some grit. They're actually going to start, as we're recording this, hosting the Big 12 series against BYU, who's 16-6 on the year. They lost their first Big 12 series, but they're a solid team. So they're going to play on Thursday, Friday, Saturday to let the Lady Cougars have a travel day on Sunday. They'll be back in action tonight. On the men's side, after a disastrous weekend spent at a MLB stadium, which they should never do, they won 3 of 4 against the ranked upset over the Texas Tech Red Raiders. Absolutely murdered them Friday night, 22-8. Fell 7-2 on Saturday, but then a back and forth rally on Sunday for a 9-7 win to clinch the win in the conference opener and to, I believe, go perfect over Texas Tech in every major sport this year in the final year of the Big 12.
Yeah, I mean, I think we got to say it, football, basketball, track, various sports. It was nice for baseball after that, the wobble that we had, the very tough week, to open up the way they did. I think they brought us back in, right?
It felt cathartic.
I'm sure it was for them as well, right? 22-8, and those 22 runs, you know, 5 doubles, 4 homers, 2 grand slams. Just to, like, the way it was a cold, windy night in Lubbock, but the way there's nothing to do on a Friday night in Lubbock, so I guess, you know, the whole town shows up.
Hit dingers, baby.
By the middle of that game, that the stands had emptied, where you could hear people just having conversations in the stadium. It was so quiet. It was so beautiful because, you know, Tech fans can just be an annoying bunch. So it was nice to just see it empty and miserable. There was a particular scene where, you know, some people moved immediately down to the front row behind the catcher, so they were on TV, were horns downing, and then their faces as they hit a grand slam immediately after, was just beautiful. Texas needed it in a really big way. Pierce needed it in a big way. They needed to see that they could do that. I'm not going to, you know, say too much, but Texas is up to 14th in the RPI after that really tough stretch of games. And, you know, going on the road and everything, they now start a 10-game homestand and a 19-game stretch of not playing an RPI top 60 team before they play number 58 U of H in early mid-April. So they have some time to heal, to lick the wounds a little bit, to build up a little bit of that bully mentality, to beat the teams they should, to pad the stats a little, you know, make everything look right, work out some kinks in the rotation, figure out what that is. So they have some time now. We said beforehand, brutal stretch of the season, don't judge everything off of it. Really nice stretch of the season after it. But what did all Texas fans do? The sky is falling. And I get it, right? I would have loved to win.
Yeah.
One or two of those games that they lost, right? And they lost some in heartbreaking fashion. But nonetheless, this was really good and really needed. And then after the huge explosion, right, the 22, when they lose the Saturday game, it's like, well, it was you know, the last gasp of a dying man. They let it all out there. That's all they have. The fact that they rallied back and won a tough one on Sunday, I think really said something about the guts that this team might just have. Like we talked about grit, like we'll just have to see what they have. And it's some familiar names, but there's also guys like Will Gasparino and Max Bellier, the Big 12 player of the week, who are coming into their own, young guys who we expect a lot from, and you started to see it. It's not just Jared Thomas and Peyton Powell. You're seeing some other guys come into their own and really help carry this team.
I mean, it's good for them to build some momentum, right? There was a lot of chatter from the Tech faithful following that disastrous trip to Houston that they were going to absolutely beat the crap out of Texas. And so for Texas to come in and just absolutely put the boots on them Friday, and then really, like you said, win a tough, great one on Sunday to take the series. It's good to get this early in the season, early in conference, to get things moving in the direction. So speaking of getting things moving in the right direction, Texas has Washington this weekend at the Dish, so hopefully get a measure of revenge for the college football playoff, maybe put another 20 or 30 runs on them. On the hard surface, number 12 men's tennis, tops number one Ohio State, fun, clinched it at 4-0, but played out the remaining ones. Elliott Fazeri, Michael Braswell, and GAB had wins over the number 7, number 17, and number 32 singles players, respectively.
Yeah, and Texas took the doubles point, including a win over the number 5 ranked doubles team. Ohio State is a really good team, monster. Stacked. I mean, you're looking at UVA, TCU, Texas, and Ohio State is the four best, probably, teams come the end of the season. And Texas has played all of them and played them very close, right? They have beat at least one of them, and they've had two final point matches really, really close against UVA and TCU. So Texas has had some battles, some trenches. Coach Burke was basically saying, look, they've had some balls that just didn't bounce their way. They've had some really tough ones that if a couple things went their way, you know, it's looking different. And the guys were just getting frustrated with being unable to see the win, right? You see the process, they put in the work, and then it comes out there and you lose those heartbreakers. So to get this one in a decisive way, you know, get that number back to single digits where it belongs, start whittling away at it and hope to get the revenge on TCU later in the season, right? I think they still have a ton to play for. And in fact, I think they have it all to play for. This win should get them in the right mindset. They need that killer instinct if they're going to get to the goals that they set for themselves with those guys coming back, with doubling up your Braswells, getting a Spazieri back, doubling up your Baez. They're bringing in the guns. They're setting up for this is the year. It's not next year. Could have been last year, but this is the year. So it's good to see this win, and let's see what plays out in the coming weeks off the momentum of this one.
Yeah, they've got an opportunity to continue to build some of that momentum. They've got teams that are right outside of the top 25. They've got Athens are going to Athens to take on Georgia, and then to LA for USC. Not a bad spring break trip for them. On the ladies' side, number 7 women's tennis sweeps the week completely, going 7-0 over West Virginia on Friday, and then 7-0 over Cincy on Sunday. Absolutely just wild. This team is going to be a team to be reckoned with when the season wraps up.
That's right. I'm calling this Cincinnati. This is the first time playing Cincinnati. I'm calling that the Peyton Stearns Cup since she is from Cincy. The inaugural Peyton Stearns Cup was stayed in Austin. They're very good at home. Like both of these teams, men's and women are 16-1 at home. The men, like I mentioned earlier, was a final point loss to the time number one UVA is the only loss at home. But the women are 8-0 at home. It's tough to beat a Texas team at the Texas Tennis Center when you got 1,000 rowdy fans out there cheering on a college tennis match. This for both of these teams, it will be, can you go to the neutral site? Can you go to the postseason tournaments? Can you take that energy that you have at home and can you extend it wherever you're playing? So that will be the thing to watch for me. But this, I really like this women's tennis team. They're so balanced top to bottom. They're talented all the way through.
Yeah, they've got a well designed or composed team, I suppose. I would have an opportunity to continue to make some waves and get that number next to their name smaller. Speaking of not bad spring break trips, the number 19 men's golf team finishes as the runner-up out at St. Simons, Georgia at the Johnny O Intercollegiate. I thought that was Genio Intercollegiate at first and got excited to make some sausage puns, but it was, in fact, not.
Well, you don't have to ask how the sausage was made. You just have to know that Texas, showed up out in Georgia and
sausage.
Indeed, and a lot of it was Christian Moss. I don't have a South African sausage touch point. If anyone out of our listeners, I know we have international listeners, wants to send me your finest South African delicacies to try. I know peri peri chicken, but I don't go too deep after that. I do love some, not even just Nando's. There's a place in Houston. I'll give a shout out to Chef Paul, who has a South African place. It's delicious. But anyways, that's my other podcast and my other career talking about food. But Christian Moss, who is a very good golfer, recorded a tie for fourth place in the individuals with a 8 under, on the final day. Looking solid, looking like and they missed him last week when he was playing in the African Championship, looking like a probably cornerstone piece for as far as this team wants to go. That 19 feels very misleading to me. I think they're a top 12 team right now, and I think this and some upcoming tournaments will show that.
Yeah, I think it'll shake it out. They've got an exhibition match play against number 16 Illinois. That'll give them an opportunity to show what they're made of Oakley, I think we're going.
All right, Gerald, now let's take a look at the world through some burnt orange lenses. A couple of awards, we didn't cover them up top, but on the men's basketball side, Dylan Disu named the Big 12 Most Improved Player. It's hard to forget, you know, he really exploded in the postseason last year with an injury that ended his postseason. Took him a while to get going, but boy, has he. This season winning the Most Improved, and then a name that kind of we all expected to be on this particular list, Max Asemus, all newcomer, named to the second team, all Big 12, in a really deep and loaded conference. You know, it would have been great to see a Longhorn crack that to the first team, but, you know, there's just talent all around. Women's golf's Farrah O'Keefe also named the Big 12 Golfer of the Month.
Lots of deserved awards. Farrah O'Keefe was on a tear last month, so big ups to her. And obviously, Dylan Disu getting Most Improved feels right for him, because like he really came on late in the year and then was pretty dominant when he was on the court. So I think that all shakes out. That all makes sense to me.
All right, so the news of Sark getting his extension was all over the internet. I hope people are equally as excited that on the heels of back-to-back national championships, volleyball coach Jarrett Elliott got his 4-year contract extension, rightfully so, well-deserved, through 2029. I couldn't believe he's been at Texas 23 years. If you'd have told me that number was 14, 15, like that probably sounds right, 23. Maybe we're just old, but 23 years he's been here, and now he's got at least 5 more to add on to that, and hopefully many, many more till he decides to hang them up. But cashing in while it's hot, no better time to do it than after back-to-back national championships.
Absolutely. And he's a guy who, you know, really, not, I don't want to say built the program, but created what this program is today. They were good right before Jarrett Elliott, but now they are one of the elites of the elites. You know, I have family who are diehard Sooner fans, and their oldest daughter is a pretty solid club volleyball player. And she's like, I hope I get offered by Texas. So like, that's the kind of thing Jarrett Elliott has done for the organization. So it's much deserved. And he's probably, honestly, he got a raise, and he probably still is underpaid for the value that he's bringing in. 220 consecutive top 10 polls, right? Winning 835, which is 6th best in Division I, like not just for Texas, but like Division I all together. So absolutely incredible outing for him. And again, much deserved.
Absolutely. Should have had this one with the other basketball news. Back to basketball. Men's basketball announced they are competing at the 2024 Legends Classic at Barclays. And that's not something that they're necessarily new to. This will be their fourth trip. They won the inaugural 2007 with a win over the number 7 Tennessee. They played in 2011 and 2016. But the part that I think has got the internet ablaze is the teams who are included in that one.
Yeah, I mean, Syracuse, St. Joseph's, those are good matchups. And then after all the posturing about never playing Texas Tech again, immediately the next year, Texas will be playing a tournament against Texas Tech.
But not in Lubbock, Gerald. That's the important thing. I do
not
think.
Not in Lubbock.
Hilariously, we never will never Lubbock. Play in Lubbock. And I was joking, it may be just as far and a much easier flight to get from Austin to Brooklyn than from Austin to whatever Lubbock regional airport is. So, yes, I never go to Lubbock ever again. Someone who never has to go to Lubbock, But we'll go all around the world and continue winning things. Scottie Scheffler wins this past week in the Arnold Palmer Invitational. Won it by 5 strokes, which is the largest margin of victory at the event since Tiger in 2012. It's Scottie's first win of the year, 7th tour win. For some reason, I thought he was a little bit closer to double digits. But the big number here, Gerald, is the one on the horizon for the University of Texas golf alums.
Yeah, after winning all of the lemonade and iced tea at this tournament, Texas now sits 99th, or has its 99th tour win, all time. So one more Texas will hit the Century Club for that, which is absolutely incredible.
It is, and you know, Texas has many Longhorns who could do it, right? Jordan Spieth could swoop in there and get his 14th. You know, is Dylan Fratelli gonna pop his head up somewhere? Jonathan Vegas, who knows? Doug Grimm, which of these guys is gonna make it? I odds on favorite would of course be Scottie Scheffler, best golfer in the world, but we'll see. We shall see. Let's get it soon. Get to that 100 club. Stanford has an unfair advantage just because of Tiger. But yes, really, really great mark for the university and for Scottie. Number 4, rowing. Had a couple of folks recognized. Seniors Anna Jensen and Lainey Nitsch were named to the CRCA Athletes to Watch list for the upcoming season.
Yeah, Texas rowing season, our favorite season, right around the corner. April 6th and 7th, got the San Diego Crew Classic in Cali. Say that 4 times fast.
I'll try it off air. Gerald, let's close it out with our final 2 segments here, starting with a bit of Godzillatron. What are you watching on your giant screen?
Yeah, so it was not a ton of watching this week. Like I said, we're back in Oklahoma visiting my mother-in-law and my family here, so we're on a road trip. I got a new audiobook called The Rage of Dragons, and it's, you know, my typical fantasy listen, except it's not. The way I can describe it, it is an African inspired like fantasy, epic fantasy story. Might be a spoiler. It's almost like if you took like military fiction, like military fantasy, and specifically Arya's storyline from Game of Thrones and mishmashed them all together. That's what the vibes I'm getting of. It's really good. It's like this guy's first book, and I'm like, nobody should be this good in their first book. It is incredible. I remember listening to the prologue and being like, whoa, this is different, this is new, this is cool. And I really honestly wanted to hear more of that story, and then that was like how the society got established, and they jumped a couple of centuries and got into the actual story. But it's real, real good. It's the first of a 4-book cycle this guy has written, and apparently all of them are just as good. So that, and then if you are of a nerdy ilk, then you know this. Legendary manga artist and anime director Akira Toriyama passed away earlier this month from, he had a subdural hematoma or something, which is absolutely terrifying to think about. But, I restarted rewatching Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z. Nice. Dragon Ball Z was a huge part of my childhood. If you don't know this, my dad was in the military. We grew up, we were stationed in Okinawa for 3 years. And so that was when Dragon Ball Z was in its first run on Japanese TV. And so I remember being outside with my friends. We were playing, we were riding bikes or whatever. And one of the kid that lived across the street said, "Oh, snap, what time is it?" And somebody looked, and it was like time for Dragon Ball Z to come on. So we all literally just dropped our bikes, ran inside for 30 minutes and watched the episode of Dragon Ball Z, and then came back out and started playing. And so the original Dragon Ball is weird in a lot of ways and has a lot of things that are very 1980s nerd culture in Japan, which is very inappropriate in 40 years time. But Dragon Ball Z in and of itself is a story about a man who would do anything to protect his friends and family, which is the kind of person that I feel like I want to be. It's just, just huge cultural touchstone for me. And so rest in peace to one of the greats. And I'm getting to watch some really cool nostalgic anime.
That's really awesome. I love that story you told about the bikes and being over there. And Gerald's correct. And I'll speak as one of those normal people who my entirety of my manga appetite has come from Akira Toriyama, from Dragon Ball Z first, and then going back when I liked it and watching the prequel series in Dragon Ball and the post and early online searching message boards and reading, character stats for, what Piccolo was in the early seasons versus what, you know, Broly and, you know, like just, I was deep. It's my personality if I like something to go deep, but I never, it didn't spark the love for me that maybe it did for others, which is like, now I need to go find these other shows. I just loved that show and playing the subsequent video games and years later, just loved that specific show. That was like a, get home from school, you know, sling the backpack, go straight to the TV in the kitchen, turn that on and snack and watch Dragon Ball Z every day. It was a huge part and surrounded by manga culture because I believe when I went to McDonald's recently, they are calling it WickDonald's and they have a WickDonald's sauce that's an Asian inspired sauce. It's actually delicious, but it comes with like a little cartoon. Anyways, it's very cool that they're leaning in like that. So it is pervasive, as actual, as Gerald often says, just culture. But that's a good one, Gerald. I'm glad you brought that up. The things I watch, like there's some things I'm watching currently. I'm not going to talk much about the Love is Blind reunion that I watched with my wife. And again, I always I always blame it on her of like, so my wife watched this thing, but then I find myself at work being like, yeah. And then can you believe Nick Lachey said this? He really put him on the spot. I was like, man, I guess I did watch all of that, but that's okay. I don't mind it.
I told my wife last night that this is the only way I want to take in Love is Blind is just correct. Watch the reunion show. Like she can watch the rest of the season. I just want to watch the reunion show.
And it kind of works because like she watched most of the season without me, but I watched enough that I knew generally the storylines. There'd be times I'd be like, pause. Okay, what is this? And she'd be like, all right, let me catch you up.
It was great.
Yeah, no, it was honestly like it is human drama in its most synthesized form. So yes, sure. That is, I watched. Also I've been watching and I'm not ready to put like a capstone on it cause it's in the middle of the season, but Abbott Elementary is such a good show. If you haven't watched any of that, I envy you cause you could start from the beginning and catch up. I'm having to wait each week, but it's probably the best show that's just right now on our TVs going. You should be watching that. And then a show that I missed, and Gerald, I think you gave of equal praise, but I'm just now catching up and I'm doing it very slowly cause I know there's only three seasons and I hate the idea that it's going to be done, but I just finished the second season of Reservation Dogs and it's so unbelievably good. I guess I have started the first two episodes of the third season and it continues to be good. It's just such a, like, they're characters who I want to hang out with, who I want to know in a world that's not mine and I never knew. You lived in Oklahoma, so you're somewhat tangentially closer to it. But anyways, it's such a good show. And it's like, I tried to get my wife to watch it and I'm like, you're going to love this. She's like, I don't really want to watch like a kid show. And it's just not a kid show. It happens to focus
at all
exactly on a vehicle of a few kids is the way you get into this world that, that Sterling Harjo has built. And it's such a like uniquely, specific perspective from like native, you know, culture jokes, life on the reservation mythology, but also like approachable where everyone can get it. I don't know. I just think I'm really going to try to push this on her to watch it because I think it's such a darn good show. And I'm pushing all of you who listen to this to watch it as well. It's legitimately beautiful and funny and dumb and hilarious and like checks all the boxes.
It's also, I do want to say, it's also very emotionally heavy in some spots, especially the first season of Reservation Dogs is kind of all, and this is not a spoiler, it all happens in the shadow of one of their, it's like a little crew of indigenous kids on the reservation, and it all happens in the shadow of one of their friends passing away. And so like that's kind of the setup of the first season is them trying to figure out like how do we exist post our best friend passing away. But it's so freaking good, so well done. And like they're very much like it doesn't have the child actor problem where like the child actors kind of suck, but the writing is good. It's just, it's all good.
Yeah, I've been impressed because I don't recognize any of these people. I've seen, as I've Googled them, they're in some other things, but it was my like first, you know, viewing of any of them, almost anyone except Big, who's a completely different character than I've ever seen him. But almost everyone else on the show, it's my first, and I'm like, oh, they're going to be big. They're going to be in other things. And they have gone on to some other things because there's some really just incredible performances. But yes, we could talk all day about it because I think it's great. But let's close it out, Gerald, with our final segment with a little bit of bang the drum.
Let's do it, Kyle. The best part of everyone's week where we honor one of the best traditions in all of college athletics, Big Bertha, and we bang the drum, brought to you by Joe Ruiz. So, Kyle, what are you banging the drum on this week?
I'm just going to bang the drum really simply on Austin, on the specific cultural like relevance that comes with the fact that the school is in the biggest, you know, city that also loves college football, right? Like, there's, you know, some joke that Rutgers is New York City's football team, and I guess USC and UCLA technically are in LA, though, you know, the city of LA isn't really shutting down when there's a game, especially UCLA. Poor guys have trouble getting like 3,000 people in the stands. But, you know, to be a city the size of Austin with the cultural relevance and capital and coolness of Austin, and also the Longhorns to be the main show in town, is very, very just awesome. And you forget that sometimes. With the video game coming out, I always joke going back to the old like recruiting mechanics of, you know, you have to look at your school, where do they rank in academics, well, UT's great in like culture, and like they're just great across the board. If they're good at football, they're untouchable. Well, they've eliminated, Sark talked about it a little bit this week when he was at South by Southwest, one of the cool things that happens in Austin that everyone in every industry wants to be a part of, but he was on Stephen A. Smith's show from South by Southwest, which is Xavier Worthy joined him again, just cool opportunities. If you come to Texas, you get to just things that other schools absolutely do not. But Sark was talking about one of the biggest hurdles that people recruited against them was, you want to play in the best conference where we send people to the NFL, the best football, it's the SEC. Like, they just basically, Texas has gone and looked at the list of like, what can people recruit against us and fix them all? And they just have so many built-in advantages already. And again, the city, the events, you know, I remember Bijan Mustardson being the talk of South by Southwest last year. Like, just really cool. Like, I love that it's there and Texas doesn't shy away from that. There was also a panel about, you know, the future of NIL and college sports that had Greg Sankey, SEC commissioner, the Learfield CEO, and just, you know, obviously the incredible imprint that they have on sports and college sports in general. And then Chris Del Conte joining an ESPN anchor who facilitated. Like, it just puts Texas in the driver's seat, which they already are in so many ways, but it just reinforces our relevance because things come to Austin. When we join the SEC, everyone I've talked to, the main trip they want to, you know, road trip they want to go to is to get to go to Austin. Like, there's just something so great about the city itself that when the city loves the football, it's a great symbiotic relationship and it gives us a built-in advantage that no one else has. So as South by Southwest winds down, I just wanted to celebrate just Austin, baby.
Man, that's awesome. And I it's been a minute since I've had the margin to go to South by, but I really want to go. I need to get back and just do, like, there's all sorts of stuff that I'm interested in going to South by. But I'm making the drum this week on spring football right around the corner. And I just want us all to be normal for spring football. Just be normal. It is real easy for us to buy into the hype. And I made a joke about it on the Twitter. That wasn't me that made that joke about you know, seeing Quinn Ewers throw for the first time in spring and thinking he's Lisa Nagaib, that he's the chosen one. But let's just be normal. It is easy for us. We're fanatics. We're fans. It is what it is. But as spring football rolls around, let's just try to have some reasonable expectations, guys. Like, there is a lot of turnover. Texas moving to the SEC. There is a lot that we need to know. This could be a really good team. There's also a lot that Texas needs to be aware of.
It's a big ask, Gerald. It's a big ask to just be normal. But yes, all of our listeners, I'm sure, will be, including you and I. I believe spring practice actually, like, when they get back from spring break, they start maybe the spider pads, not full pads, but shortly thereafter we're full pads. Like, it's a little taste of football in the long desert of a couple months since we've seen organized football. You know, it's a little taste, a little sign of things to come. And I'm just excited. I mean, is transfers and big freshmen, you know, the first look at some people, but, you know, it's transfers. Sark's way of looking at it is get the guys who can plug the holes where we have. So you think anyone who is brought in has to have a chance to be the guy or immediate impact. So I'm going to be watching very closely for people stepping up for the people graduating and at the combine we just saw, and then all these new faces. I'm excited, admittedly, to see some Longhorn football.
Absolutely. Check out, I've got some previews coming up to the BON next week, so check those out as well. But that's what we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter @KyleCarbon. You can also follow the Texas Pregamer @TexasPregamer.
Follow me on Twitter at GH Goodrich. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook, Instagram, Threads, Longhorn Republic. Shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. We'll be back next week at some point because we've got some weird scheduling stuff happening, but we'll be back next week to talk all of the NCAA tournament comings and goings. But until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Princess Kate's in Lubbock.